Money, WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth in for Steve Bertrand today on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks so much for being with us and sharing part of your Wednesday with us. We're awful grateful to have you. All right, my friends, lots to do today on the program. Let's get things started with our good friend, Terry Savage, the financial expert, friend to all. Hi, Terry. How are you?
Oh, hi, Amy. Always love being on with you.
Always happy to hear from you and share your wisdom. So you have been busy writing a bunch of stuff, as you do, at terrysavage.com. And you've written a piece recently that I think is so interesting and so very important. And that is all about having the talk with your parents, having that conversation with aging relatives.
Amy, I think we got to talk about the stock market first here, though.
Okay, let's do it.
I'd love to do that first. We're coming back now with the Dow up 14 points. The Dow hit an all-time high this morning of 18,390, backed off a little bit. We're at 18,360, so to speak, right now. And it's on everybody's mind, all-time highs. And if I've had one email or one post on my blog this morning, I've had a dozen. How high can it go? What do you think, Amy?
Oh, you are the expert, and I leave the financial expertise up to you.
Guess what? I have no idea. I have absolutely no idea, and neither does anyone else you could ask. I can make a good case on both sides for the market to go significantly higher, but you'd know for sure at some point something's going to happen, something exogenous, something in Europe, something that perks the bubble. And so I just want to start out by saying, just as I, 2 weeks ago, it's just 2 weeks ago, sent out that message, Brexit, don't panic.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sending out a message in a newsletter today, which I will do later today. If you go to terrysavage.com, it's free. Sometimes I don't send them out for 6 weeks, and sometimes I get inspired to send them out more frequently. It's called Market New Highs, What Next? And the real question is not, where's the market going next? You could go to the racetrack. You could go to Las Vegas and bet on black or red. You could ask the weatherman whether it's going to rain tomorrow or not. I think the weatherman sometimes would be a little better odds than Las Vegas. But the fact of the matter is it doesn't matter what the market does. It matters what is going on in your portfolio, where are you in what stage of your life, and what's going to happen to you. Now is the perfect moment to think about it, not when everybody's panicking and selling.
Indeed. So generally speaking, it's always best when cooler heads prevail, right? No financial decision made in a panic is ever really going to work out well. But generally speaking, even though we do need to consider, our risk tolerance for our stage in life and all of those kind of things and the money we have to invest and all that kind of thing, what is generally your advice for people right now as they look at the stock market? I have seen personally just looking at social media right now, I see people tweeting and posting about the stock market who never talk about money.
That's a pretty good sign. In the olden days, you know, when Joe Kennedy, the great father of John F. Kennedy, wrote, he said, I'll know when it's time to sell when the shoeshine boy starts giving me stock tips.
Right.
And I guess the modern day version of that 80 years later would be when the Twitterverse starts coming out with tweets about the market and going higher. Look, the reason the market are higher, when I talked about this 2 weeks ago when everybody was panicked, is that there's a lot of money been created around the world, and it's mostly scared. It's scared in Europe. The euro is in serious trouble. It's touching down to a low of 110, and they have problems in their banks, especially in Italy. The euro is prohibited from bailing out banks, but the minute the Italians have to suffer, now that Britain's left, they'll vote to leave too. So there's a potential for a big collapse in the eurozone. Great Britain now has a new prime minister. There's a lot of uncertainty. The pound rebounded a little bit, but it's still down dramatically from where it was months ago. So people don't want to keep their money there. A lot of it's coming to the U.S. In the U.S., the 10-year Treasury note hit an all-time low, modern times, a yield of below 1.5%. It's below 1.5% as we see now. A bunch of Dow stocks yielded 3%. So you can see that the money from around the world that's been created to get things going has come to the U.S. It's propping up the stock market. And things aren't so, they're not great here, but they're not so bad. And there's a lot less uncertainty. So that's pushing the market higher. I have no idea what could make it drop. What I'm saying to you is, okay, there's never been a 20-year period where you lost money in a diversified portfolio of large company U.S. stocks, including dividends, adjusted even for inflation. So if you're in your 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s even, you need to keep putting the 401k money in a diversified stock market, the S&P 500 fund, the place to start.
Definitely.
You'll
definitely
retire now and you're going to have a heart attack. If the market drops 10 or 15%, then this would be the time. There's nothing wrong, even though you earn no money in your chicken money accounts, money market funds, CDs, the safest part of your 401k. Put some more money aside so you can sleep at night and you won't panic when you watch the market go down again, which it will, but I'm not sure from where.
Absolutely. Well, my friends, we're talking with Terry Savage. You can find her at terrysavage.com. We'll be right back to talk to her just a bit more. WGN, Amy Guth in for Steve Bertrand today on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Before the break, my friends, we were chatting with Terry Savage, our good friend and bestower of lots of great financial wisdom. We're always happy to have Terry with us. And there's a piece recently that you wrote, Terry, that I'd like to talk about because I think it is so, so very important. And that is about having a conversation with aging parents about finances and long-term care.
Absolutely. It's a new column just up on terrysavage.com. And it came about because of a Fidelity survey that talked about the fact that people don't have this conversation, and there is just a great disconnect between the younger generation. When I say the younger generation, if your parents are in your 70s, the next adult child generation, an incredible disconnect. 93% of parents feel it would be, quote, unacceptable to become financially dependent on their children. But 30% of children feel that it would be unacceptable. They expect to support their parents. But how about this? 69% of parents say they expect one of their children to help manage their investments and retirement finances. But a third of those adult children who are identified, that they were the ones that were going to assume this role, they had no idea their parents were planning to give them this responsibility. So I wrote a column because you know how hard it is. Well, maybe you don't. But if you've ever tried to tell your parent or grandparent that they need a hearing aid, and they go, "What do you mean? Just speak up. You're mumbling." It's 10 times harder to say, "Do you think you should stay in the house, Mom? Or do you think that you might want me to help you handle your bills?" So if you go to terrysavage.com, there's a great column. And to get you started, anytime you go to my website, there's a yellow box that I mentioned earlier, subscribe to my newsletter, which I send out when I'm highly motivated. But it gives you by return email a link to my personal financial organizer form, which you can fill out online and save to your own documents, or you can print it out, keep the link, you can send them to your family members. Just the process of going through all of those questions on there will help you do some smart planning with your parents. And, you know, I usually write this around Thanksgiving or Christmas, and then I realized, first, the Fidelity survey came out highlighting this big disconnect, and I thought, maybe nobody wants to talk about it at the holidays. Maybe a relaxing summer day is the right time. Listen, before we go, Amy, and I know we're getting down to the end, there is some headline news for a lot of Chicagoans today about their health insurance. And I think we ought to spend just a half a minute on it.
Yeah, let's do, for sure. We're going to be talking about it a little bit later here in just a bit with Frank Sennett from Crane's Chicago Business.
Oh, perfect. Well, then you'll get into it more deeply. But this has been an issue that a lot of Illinois insurers have cut back on their programs. Blue Cross Blue Shield changed its most popular health insurance program. And now, as you'll talk about with Frank, Land of Lincoln is actually shutting down, and it has 50,000 Illinois residents who will now have to find new health insurance. The problem is those promised reimbursements for their costs from the federal government haven't taken place, and they've really lost a lot of money. To me, the big economic lesson is that government is not a good organizer of health insurance. We've been running huge, of course, deficits in Medicare for a long time, but it shows up particularly in these smaller insurance programs that they set up to run. Half of the state plans that were set up to be part of Obamacare have now folded. But on a more personal basis, we're now going to have a lot of people who are going to have to switch insurance companies. And I'm going to write about that and post it at terrysavage.com as soon as, folks, I figure out where you can go, because there are so few places left. and you may wind up in a place that doesn't include your doctors that you have now or your hospital. So it's a big headline issue, and I know Frank knows the business side of it, but I think for a lot of people, the personal finance side of it is going to be very disrupting.
Definitely. And do you know of any resources where people can go to?
Well, that's what I'm going to work on. I mean, there are first of all, you need a health insurer that has a plan in this state. And, of course, the Obamacare website, which is healthcare.gov, I think it is, that will be the place that will be give you the search. But, you know, there are not too many alternatives left in Illinois.
Definitely.
And so I'm going to write about it and see what you have. But unfortunately, remember the plan that you could keep your own. Remember the promise you could keep your own doctor?
Sure.
Well, it's not happening because even at the Obamacare plans at healthcare.gov, you're going to find out there are very few plans available now in Illinois, and many of them may not include all of your physicians or even your most important ones.
Yeah, it may be tricky.
I'm studying it. Frank knows the business side, why they're going broke. They're going broke because they didn't get the promised government reimbursements, and they just had a lot more sicker people apply for these plans and just couldn't cover the cost. But anyway, so what a great day this has been. I know we're coming to an end. Stock market at all-time highs. Your homework assignment is to say, oh, my gosh, what if it fell? Not how great if it goes higher, but what if it fell? That's the first step, today's homework. And the second is, if you have Land of Lincoln healthcare through the Obamacare exchange, we're going to have to start thinking about where you go to get new health insurance.
Indeed. And everybody can head to terrysavage.com, and she will help you with excellent advice. Thanks so much for being with us today, Terry, and dispensing your wisdom.
Thanks, Amy. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. All right, my friends, let's take a little break and get you to news and check in with Kim Gordon and all that good stuff. We'll be back in just a bit on 720 WGN. WGN, Amy Guth in for Steve Bertrand today here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. We are joined now by our very good friend, Frank Sinnott from Crane's Chicago Business. Always happy to see you here in the studio with us. How are you?
Good, Amy. I'd love to be here with you.
It's excellent to
see
you.
It's been a while.
I know. It's been a while since we've been on the air together. Well, there are so many stories to dig into. I kind of don't know where to start, but I think I do know because Terry Savage brought it up before the news, and that is all this stuff that's going on with this Obamacare provider here in Illinois that's going to potentially put a lot of Illinois residents out of health insurance and make them scrambling. She talked a little bit about the financial impact, but I'm hoping you can break down the business impact of that for us.
Yeah, so Land of Lincoln Health is the Obamacare insurer that was launched 3 years ago to bring competition to the online exchange, but it didn't go as planned, and it's now liquidating because of big financial losses. The feds tried to prop them up, didn't work, and so they have nearly 50,000 members. A lot of those folks are going to be scrambling to try to get health care. This is a big failure for the Obamacare exchange, which, you know, certainly the ACA, the Affordable Care Act program will continue in Illinois. That's an important thing to note. But this particular co-op is going out of business.
And that's going to make a lot of people scramble. And I imagine it's going to make a lot of people very, very unhappy because as we think about, you know, I think part of it was you get to keep your doctors and the things you like. And suddenly if you have to scramble, you might be really limited in your choices.
Yeah, and so what happened was with the losses that they had, more than $90 million in 2015 and more than $17 million losses just this year through May 31st, they couldn't sustain it. But the problem is now, as you say, there's not going to be as much competition. So prices may indeed go up. Blue Cross Blue Shield dominates that marketplace, and it's the largest insurer in Illinois. There are a couple of others in the exchange. But, you know, always less competition. You look at some price pressures.
Yeah, indeed. Well, it'll be really interesting to see how that plays out, and we're going to keep turning to chicagobusiness.com to follow that story and to keep us all up to date on it. Another thing that is going on with in particular with this area that I think is a name we all know and love, and that is that the name behind Mariano's stores is looking at a little bit of a shift change there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you think about the great grocery chains of yore, and they often were named after a person. This is one of the last ones. Mariano's Fresh Market's named after Bob Mariano, CEO of Roundy's, and he is going to retire September 1st. first. He started his supermarket career back in 1967, and he opened his first Mariano's, owned by Roundy's, in 2010, and there are now 34 Mariano stores in the Chicago area. And, you know, they're known for a little bit of a high-end shopping experience. Some of them have piano players in there, et cetera. And
some
got
have a bar.
Yeah, a bar, you know, coffee bars. It's just a very kind of elegant grocery shopping experience. And when he announced his retirement, he also announced that he's going to be a strategic advisor to Kroger and Roundy's for 2 years after he retires. But this transition comes after they sold the company. Last November, Kroger bought Roundy's, which is Mariano's parent company. But at that time, Bob Mariano said he had no plans to retire. So, you know, less than a year later, he's seeing greener pastures.
He's rethought that decision.
And he's 66, so yeah. he's probably still got a little gas in the tank, maybe do some fun stuff in semi-retirement and consulting. But
well, I think it's a responsible, you know, and really great move to stay there in that consultant way to kind of make that transition really, really smooth.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, because I always get a kick out of those stores personally. It's one of my favorite places to shop. But it is the nice thing to me is like there's a real guy.
Right.
It's not like some made up cartoon pig or something.
Right. No offense to Piggly Wiggly chains. But
I don't know what I was thinking of.
Right, indeed.
Maybe there is a Mr. Wiggly.
There probably is. I'm sure there is.
P. Wiggly. You know,
if he is, I'm sure that guy got so many prank calls in the phone book back
right.
in the day
That's
when there
right.
were phone books. Oh, goodness. But another store that we are looking at here in Chicago, and that is Anthropologie, very popular clothing store. That looks like it's going to be popping up in the Fulton Market District.
Yeah, so look at the evolution of that West Loop area, the Fulton Market area, from the Meatpacker, really kind of industrial, cool, old spaces that you could buy, you know, meat off the hoof almost, to this restaurant row, and then some condos started coming in. I saw somebody with a stroller the other day when I went to dinner there, and I thought, okay, this neighborhood is really changing, and now we're getting high-end retail. So this is the big, to me, the tipping point for the Fulton Market neighborhood. Anthropologie is coming in, owned by Urban Outfitters, and they're also doing a Free People shop a block away. So once that happens, it kind of becomes like Soho or something, right?
Well, I was going to say, when Soho House went in that area, right over there, kind of behind Girl and the Goat, that's when I knew, well, it won't be long before some big retail goes in and this neighborhood really starts to change.
Hipster hotels, and they're starting to go in there as well, and clubs. And I think so. In probably in 5 years' time, it's going to feel a lot like Wicker Park feels now, I would guess. And, you know, and all the good and bad that entails. I mean, there's still a lot of fun to be had in Wicker Park, too. But it's just so strange, even a few years ago, that neighborhood still had that kind of raw feel. And there's still a lot of delivery trucks taking product out, but fewer and fewer.
And there's some really important, staples of that area. I mean, I'm thinking of, like, Isaacson's, that fishmonger
there. They're
still there and still very popular and still very, very key parts of the city.
And you wonder, though, as the real estate values go up, it's like the great example of drive-in movie theaters. You know, they were very popular, but they ended up going out of business because the real estate costs got so high they had to sell.
They'd
be crazy not to.
Yeah.
So I wonder how long some of these purveyors can hold out before they maybe move to a cheaper location and cash out because they're sitting on a gold mine.
Yeah, and I always think it's very, very interesting to watch how neighborhoods evolve. You know, even just 5 years ago, Humboldt Park was a very different place, and now lots of cool hipster things were going in Humboldt, and it's a popular thing for realtors now, whereas before they might try to say it's Bucktown or try to say it's another neighborhood.
And in our formative years, I mean, look at River North.
Yeah.
You know, that is now so polished and so built up, and it was a very raw neighborhood back in the, late 80s.
Not even that long ago.
Yeah.
Right.
And even, sometimes at night, the Guth Gauntlet.
Right.
There's still some rough and tumble stuff that
happens. Sometimes you got to live tweet what you see.
That's
indeed.
Right.
My friends, this has been sponsored by Allstate. Thank you so much to Frank Sinnott. We will keep these conversations going here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. We're going to take a quick break and be back in just a bit on 720 WGN. WGN. It's Amy Guth in for Steve Bertrand today here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. You know, I think it's PSA time. my dear friend, producer, esteemed producer, Michael Heidemann, I got to get something off my chest. And that is, you know, brands do this thing where, you know, brand social media managers really want to, you know, they've been hired to make sure their brand is seen by an optimal number of people. I get that. That is exactly what you want to do when you are managing social media. But what happens is they will grab on a hashtag that is suddenly has a big groundswell around it, for better or worse. Sometimes brands will grab a hold of a hashtag and participate in that. And I so rarely see that working out well because, you know, so the social media age that we're in right now has democratized media so much. And so that if a brand does something stupid, they're going to get called on it really quickly by the public, right? And we see that kind of thing happen all the time.
Absolutely. I can't tell you. It's almost every single time I look in the news, there's some story about a flub from a company that has tried to attack or attach themselves to some kind of hashtag or something like that.
Hardly a week goes by where we don't see something. But especially in times of great news story, when big, big things are happening, I am a little bit shocked that nobody has done it in the last couple of weeks. Because I think it would be so insensitive to try to sell something, you know, right now when we're in this moment of just so much angst and so much sorrow and so much fret going on in the world. But I'm sure someone will do it, but it reminds me of some of the really, really big ones. I mean, even when Prince died not that long ago, some brands tried to do that. There were a couple I thought were okay. I mean, I thought the one where, Corvette did one.
Yeah, they did one. What did they say though?
They just had a red Corvette because it was in his song.
Come on.
They said something like, you know, goodbye. And it was okay. It wasn't really too pushy. The one that kind of got a lot of angst going on social media was the Cheerios one because it was all purple and they used, I don't remember the word, I think they said goodbye or something, but they had a period in there and the period was a Cheerio and that Cheerio got people so mad. They were so mad about that Cheerio. And I mean, I think one of the in recent memory anyway, and feel free to call me and tell me if you can think of one more recently, 312-981-7200, or text us, of course, or find me on social media. I'm on Twitter and Facebook. One that comes to mind that really was so cringeworthy was, what's the pizza that's like, it's not delivery, it's
DiGiorno,
that one. During the Ray Rice Baltimore Ravens domestic violence thing, right? There was a hashtag where women who had survived domestic violence situations were tweeting and to display and to kind of raise awareness that it's not so easy just to say, hey, leave. If you don't leave, it's your fault. Mm-hmm. They were trying to raise awareness around that. And so this hashtag, why I stayed, kind of stayed up. It started going and people were talking about like the economic reasons they were being, you know, they had to leave or they had to stay or, you know, there was different reasons why people said they couldn't leave as quickly as they wanted to when confronted with domestic violence. DiGiorno's used that and they said hashtag why I stayed because we had pizza.
No, they didn't.
The internet blew up with, as the cool kids say, people were really upset about that,
yeah.
Obviously, because it was kind of making light of something that was so serious like domestic violence.
Now, when you see these kind of things happening, do you think the companies know the whole story around it? Do you think they're just being tongue-in-cheek with these kind of things? Or do you think it's just a major flub that no one was looking over somebody's shoulder and then they just click send? And
I think it's a combination of things because sometimes, unfortunately, there are still companies that don't understand the power and value of social media. I mean, frankly, digital should be a department head. It should be a funded department. And there are still some companies that relegate social media to an intern and just say, hey, you're a young person, deal with this, instead of really funding it and using it all the strength and power that it is. I mean, social media can start political revolutions. Like, let's look at Arab Spring for a minute. It's completely changed the role of the eyewitness in crime right now. I mean, it's a very powerful tool. And so when people aren't really valuing social media and they kind of relegate it to someone who maybe doesn't know the business objectives or, you know, maybe someone who's just young and inexperienced or whatever, it's easy to kind of, you know, to kind of step in it. And then the whole company looks really insensitive. But we shall see. We haven't seen anything like that lately.
Yeah.
In the last couple of weeks, I'm really glad. I mean, Dallas Strong. I was watching social media because I was like, please, that headline or that hashtag was going. I was like, please, nobody try to sell anything right now using that hashtag. We saw it a little bit during the right after the Boston Marathon bombing. There was Boston Strong, and a couple of brands tried and really quickly got pounced on. Mm-hmm. I think there was an athletic company that was local to Boston that tried to use it to say Boston is strong, and we've got everything on sale to prove it or something, and people were like, reel it in.
Yeah.
Don't be doing that. And so I think quickly people realize this is a very big deal. But I think people are kind of realizing that. I also think people are so busy spending all the time fighting on the internet right now.
Exactly.
Divorcing their families.
Everything that can be negatively said has been said on the internet. And it's really funny. We have our intern Mike here who mentioned the fact that a lot of times these celebrities are opening up themselves through branding and stuff like that. And they'll be like, hey, you know, I'm on the internet. Ask me anything. And then instead of like, you know, a sports guy being asked sports questions, it's all about the worst kind of allegations and everything like that. So social media holds this really timid, you know, fear of what people can go through, and it can really blow up in your face really easily.
It really can. I mean, a lot of the stuff around, like, all of Bill Cosby's woes in the last couple years, that was a result of him doing that. Like, there was a picture that he said something like, turn this into a meme.
Yeah, meme me.
Meme me. And mm-hmm. quickly, it was like, okay, I have something to say to you, Bill Cosby. And that's how that happened. I mean, there we go, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm telling you, it democratized media in such an interesting way. But as for everybody fighting right now on the internet, because it seems like even very innocuous stories that brands and news organizations are posting, people are fighting really hard in the comment section right now. Tensions are high. And my thing is, and you can see where I do this on my own Facebook page, but I always just, no matter how rude someone else is, they don't dictate my manners. So I always come back with empathy and respect, and I try to, you know, be respectful. I will say, okay, too far, like reel it in. But I think it's important that we try to hear each other a little bit.
Absolutely, especially in such a sensitive time. It's like you got to take the social media for what it's worth. Take it with a grain of sand. Don't come attacking people, because now with the fact that, you know, these social media outbreaks of like war and everything, or you can band together to boycott, you know, in the South China Sea, Chinese social media is urging people to boycott mangoes right now. So anything can be done with this. So you got to keep that in mind and be responsible when you're using social media.
And my rule is, if you feel like you need to start a sentence with actually, what you're going to say is probably going to be a little snarky. And maybe don't say it. That's mm-hmm. my rule. Don't start a sentence with actually on the internet, my friends. That's the thing you've learned today. All right. Let's take a little break. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN.